NPR. Let's take a moment of silence for milk. It is a tough time for the dairy industry.
Yeah, pour one out for the dairy industry, but don't pour too much out. That's their problem.
This is for you, dairy industry. Dean Foods, the largest milk company in the United States, just filed for bankruptcy.
Dean Foods makes Tuscan, Lando Lakes, Friendly's Ice Cream. These are iconic brands. And Dean Foods is huge. It has 930,000 cows, 16,000 human employees, 58 manufacturing facilities in 29 states. So how did this happen? How did it end up bankrupt? We didn't have to look too far for the answer, actually.
We didn't even have to leave the office. What kind of milk do you drink?
Oh, complicated question.
What kind of milk do I drink? I drink 2%.
I drink almond milk.
I go between vitamin D and 2%.
Oat milk.
If I'm buying it myself, I buy soy milk because it's not that expensive. If I'm buying coffee, I like won't pay extra for alt milk.
I don't drink milk, but I eat yogurt.
Yeah, I'm feeling a bit sad for milk now. Although I myself also don't really drink milk.
But this is not a story about the decline of the dairy industry. Instead, it's a story about the explosion of varieties of products. A new study from the University of Chicago's Booth School of Business says that between 2004 and 2016, the number of niche products, varieties at the grocery store, have grown by about 70%. And if you go stand in front of the potato chip section, you can see it. There are so many choices. One brand, Kettle, has 31 varieties. I know because I counted. But why weren't they there before? What took so long? I'm Sally Herships.
And I'm Cardiff Garcia. Welcome to The Indicator from Planet Money. Consumers have always wanted and appreciated more choice, more variety, more products. But until recently, companies couldn't produce all that variety in a way that was cost-effective. So on today's show, we are going to take a look at how innovations in technology and manufacturing made available those rosemary-flavored potato chips that Sally loves so much. Or, I guess, the wasabi-flavored almonds that I love. And we are also going to take a look at how the growing popularity of these niche products has affected even the size of grocery stores themselves, but not in the way you might think.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Google. From Connecticut to California, from Mississippi to Minnesota, millions of American businesses are using Google tools to grow online. Learn more at google.com/grow.
Support also comes from TIAA, committed to the idea that while most things in life run out, from clean shirts in the morning to a favorite dessert at night, lifetime income in retirement shouldn't. Learn more at TIAA.org/neverrunout.
So how did we get from a grocery store where there were just a few kinds of potato chips, maybe sour cream and onion or barbecue, to today? Or take yogurt. A spokesperson from Yoplait told me that the company makes 100 different kinds. 100! John Stanton teaches food marketing at St. Joseph's University. He also wrote a book about niche products. And he says the answer is simple. 4 letters.
It's today's industry is, we say, ABCD. Always be collecting data.
Huh. Wait, is that a thing? Did you make that up or is that a thing?
No, I made that up.
We all know this as consumers. Our every move is tracked online, and how you even have to be careful of what you Google because you will be haunted by ads for months, even for things you've already bought. John says all of this digital tracking of consumers helps food producers figure out exactly what we want.
The media has gotten more targeted. The products have gotten more targeted. And the consumers have gotten more used to the fact that they can get exactly what they want.
Like less milk from cows and more milk from plants. And all of this is coming from increasingly granular data. It's gotten really powerful. Brett Nyman teaches economics at Booth, and he's one of the authors of the new study looking at niche products. He says even that study itself would not have been possible a couple of decades ago because they wouldn't have had the data, incredibly rich microdata.
data sets where you can study, you know, literally what items are placed in the shopping cart of tens of thousands of households and process that data.
So Brent says we now know that buying niche products is a powerful trend, and it's happening across demographics in a sweeping and enormous way. Joe Vavra teaches economics at Booth. He co-authored the study with Brent.
You can focus on just rich households, and you see within rich households a growing importance of niche consumption. You can look at just poor households and see the same increase in niche consumption for poor households. You can do this for college, non-college, black, white.
So more and more consumers are getting what they want. But expanding product lines so that they include all these varieties represents a huge shift for companies. And there are two big obstacles that they had to overcome. Here's John Stanton again.
You know, the desire to have certain kinds of food may have always been there, but companies didn't produce it because it was too expensive to make a smaller quantity. And frankly, if they did, how would they tell people that the product exists and not waste their money and advertise to everybody?
John brings up a couple of important questions. First, how is a company supposed to handle manufacturing multiple flavors and varieties? I mean, think about it. Let's say you're a potato chip manufacturer. How do you make sure that none of the wasabi spice gets into the Korean barbecue chips or the maple bacon chips? So think about all the machines and equipment that need to be cleaned before you switch flavors. John says the answer there is new technology. A lot of the innovations are computerized manufacturing systems, and tech is responsible not just for tracking consumers' data, it's also responsible for making it possible to quickly clean the equipment and to switch over to a new flavor to produce the chips we want.
What might have taken, you know, a day to change over from just plain salt chips to a flavored chip, now they can do in minutes.
We reached out to a bunch of brands to find out how long it takes them to switch between one flavor and another, and to ask them about their newest tech. A number didn't respond. So Delicious, a company which makes dairy-free food and beverages, declined to comment. Spokespeople for both Yoplait and Kettle Chips were helpful, but neither could discuss details about their manufacturing processes. That information is often considered a trade secret.
Yeah, but what we do know is that in addition to needing updated technology, brands also needed to update their advertising and promotion strategies. It's hard to sell one product, let alone all these different varieties, niche products, flavors, whatever you want to call them. You only have so many marketing dollars, and with all this variety, those dollars are spread more thinly. Yoplait, the yogurt company, says that TV continues to be useful in reaching a mass market. But both Yoplait and Kettle, the potato chip company, say that in addition to advertising on TV, they also promote via social media.
Then there's shipping and distribution to the grocery store. John says there may be more varieties, but that doesn't mean stores are getting bigger or that there's more room on store shelves. According to the Food Marketing Institute, a professional association which represents grocery stores, stores are experimenting with smaller spaces, less square footage. But John says this is where, once again, new technology in the form of consumer data swoops in to save the day. Manufacturers know what consumers want. They know what to ship where.
So zoom out of the grocery store for a minute and think a little bit more abstractly about what we're saying here. The stuff we put in our shopping carts and how different all those items are could be saying something interesting about us. Here's Brent, the co-author of the study again.
There are a lot of areas of modern life, a lot of walks of modern life in which we're increasingly segmenting and separating from the common experience. Whether it's polarizing in the kind of news that we read or the places that we visit or live. And I do find it simply interesting that increasingly even our grocery carts look increasingly different from each other.
Would I even recognize you by your grocery cart, Sally?
Totally, the rosemary potato chips.
That's the giveaway, right. Today's episode of The Indicator was produced by Jared Marcel. Our fact checker is Nadia Lewis. Our editor is Patty Hirsch. And The Indicator is a production of NPR.